This episode of Sober Awkward is brought to you by leading grey area drinking coach Sarah Rusbach. Find out more about Sarah's incredible April alcohol-free challenge later in the show.
The kettle's boiled, Vic.
Great. Perfect timing. Just a dash of milk for me, please, mate.
Here you go. Shall we get started then?
Have you ever woken up on a Sunday morning and said, I'm never drinking again, and then found yourself waving 50 bucks at a barman by happy hour?
Are you wondering why everyone else can stop at one, while you head to a dodgy after party with a weird bloke called Disco Dave? If so, it might be time to take a deeper look at your relationship with your reliable social crutch, alcohol.
On each episode, we'll investigate our own dysfunctional dealings with booze and find out if it's possible to stop this deeply ingrained habit before things get too messy.
Yep, we're going to open up a shame shed of humiliating drinking stories to help you understand why waking up from a booze coma each weekend with a kebab sticking out of your top pocket might actually be negatively impacting your health.
Hamish and I are here to delve into what it's like being sober, an unwanted warts and all look into why giving up those cheeky pints or putting down those mummy wines will make you feel happier, help your anxiety and mental health, and turn you into the most sparkly, authentic version of you.
Won't that mean I become boring though, Vic?
Well, Hamish, we'll just have to wait and see. I'm Victoria Vanstone.
I'm Hamish Adams-Cairns.
And this is Sober Awkward.
Right, Vic, you've got a weird dream you want to tell me about.
Well, it's my favourite dream that I've ever had, actually. And I don't often tell it to people because everyone thinks how weird my brain must be.
Okay, when did this happen?
Well, it's about a couple of years ago, but it's when someone asks me, have you ever had a weird dream? This is the one that comes to my head.
Okay.
And I'm in a campsite in France, and Whitney Houston is in like an old Citroen, mm-hmm. and she's got a caravan on the back, and she's backing the caravan into a very tight space.
Okay.
And I'm like, Whitney, use your wing mirrors. To the left. And she's like looking over her shoulder, spinning a steering wheel. Come on, Whitney, to the right.
Right.
Yeah, so that is my weirdest dream I've ever had as Whitney Spears.
Whitney Spears.
Did I say Britney Spears?
Said Whitney Houston.
Oh, yeah, Whitney Houston.
Whitney Spears.
Britney was in the back.
She was...
She was in the back making demands. Ah. No, it was Whitney Houston, yeah.
Did she make it in? Was it good reversing?
That was a lot. She wasn't a very good driver.
She wasn't?
No, she was awful. Come on, Whitney.
And when did it end? Like, she parked and got out of the car, or it just...
No, it just went on. It was going on and on of me just trying to guide her into the space.
Oh, that is weird. Yeah, has it recurred? Have you had that dream since?
No, but I'd like to have it again.
Wow, that's the dream you remember, Whitney Houston reversing car.
Hamish, I remember my dreams every morning. Like, isn't it funny? I don't know why some people remember dreams and some people don't. But I can tell you a dream that I've had, like, first thing in the morning, if you say, which you often wake up next to me, don't you, Hamish?
Yeah, usually, yeah.
Yeah, every morning. What have you dreamt about? I can tell you. It's usually something to do with...
Whitney Houston,
yeah.
Are you even a Whitney Houston fan?
Not really, no.
Or are you a Citroen... You're not even a camping fan.
No.
So it's a singer you don't like in a location you rarely are.
Yeah, I don't know what it's all about. It's got to be a sign. I often dream about snakes, and apparently that's a good thing. I often dream of snakes, yeah. Oh. Usually that's when John's trying to give me a special cuddle at night.
Snake crawling up your back.
Yeah, snakes and chibolatas.
Well, if anyone's listening and knows anything about dreams and wants to dissect Vic's brain through Whitney Houston reversing a Citroen, please get in touch.
It might be a long therapy session, that one. Yeah.
We could set it into a whole podcast.
Yeah, I think we probably could. What is Whitney? What does it mean? Whitney Houston back in a caravan into a car parking space.
Well, I want to start this podcast by asking you a personal question, Vic.
Oh.
More personal than your weirdest dream. If you had 9 hours of uninterrupted time in the bedroom with your husband, would you use it for lovemaking or sleep?
Sleep.
Okay. You thought about that.
And I would tell my husband probably to sleep in the spare room if it was, because he's quite hairy and quite snory. I'd probably turf him out.
Right.
Yeah. How about you?
I think 9 hours of lovemaking is beyond me.
9 seconds, more like, Hamish.
Yeah, that would be more my time frame on a good night. But certainly, I think things change when you have a child, right? Mm. I think Sunny is about to turn 9 months old, which basically means we've only slept through the night I reckon 10 times since he was born. Yeah. And I reckon 5 of those were in the last week.
And then you wake up, you're like, oh my God, are they all right? Are they alive?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you worry if they sleep through the night.
Did you wake up? No, nor did I. Yeah. Oh my God, we had one of those nights.
Yeah, scary. Well,
I don't know if I've told this story before, but the first night I was ever away from him was this wedding I went to in England. And Liz didn't go to the wedding. I did. It was in Wales, got trained there. Anyway, I was quite excited. I was staying in a hotel. I rarely stay in a hotel.
Night off.
I got there the night before the wedding, so I knew that that night wasn't going to be a late night. And Liz gave me an iron pill. The day of or the day before, hey, I had this iron pill. I've been feeling a bit low on energy. She always has iron pills. So she gave me this iron pill. Great. Off I went to the wedding. I had the runs for 48 hours. I was up more during that night than I would have been if I'd been with Sunny.
Oh no, that's so annoying.
It was cruel, really cruel.
Did she do it on purpose, do you think?
That's what I think.
I think she did, yeah.
That's her way of teaching me to go to a wedding without her.
Evil.
Yeah. Awful. Apparently, I didn't know that was a side effect. I've read that magnesium pills can give you the runs.
I guess you don't know until you try. What's going to give you the
don't
runs?
Don't try would be my advice.
Okay.
Come to think of it, you usually have... Or is it always Sandy, your dog, in the bed, and then always at least one of your three children? Sometimes you have three kids plus dog plus husband in your bed.
Yeah.
So when was the last time you slept in an empty-ish, other than maybe John, bed?
It's very rare, I would say.
Like
hardly
once
ever.
A year?
Once every few months, I would say, that everybody sleeps through. There's always something going on. As the kind of sun goes down, the night creatures come out to play. It's quite frightening, really. John's better at sleeping with them because they wriggle around a lot, and I'm not very good with wrigglers in the bed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, God, you've got to get them out because they're just being annoying. But they come in, there's nightmares, there's bed wetting still. I hear noises in the garden, make John run around in the garden in the buff. There's always something going on at night at our house. It's crazy. And it's very annoying because I do often wake up feeling like I've had absolutely no sleep at all. And we are all prone to having weird dreams. Actually, I must say quickly, my dad has the funniest dreams that I've ever heard.
So it's genetic.
He dreamt that he invented something called scud running, which is when you dig your heels onto the ground and it sort of propels you forward. And he was like the world famous scud runner.
Wow.
Like his dreams are really specific. And my mum wakes up in the night because he's literally running like a marathon in bed. And once he woke up there on holiday in Spain or something, and my mum was like, Roger, what are you doing? Because he was crouched down behind the sunbed because he thought snipers were like shooting at him from the hotel rooftop. Like he acts out his dreams.
Oh, so he's walking and...
Yeah, he's up and about, yeah.
That's cool. Yes. I've always wondered if their eyes are open. If you sleepwalk, are your eyes open or not?
Well, funny enough, George does sometimes walk in his sleep. And last night he was in the airing cupboard trying to make a drink of water. I was like, George, what are you doing? He's like, I'm making water. I'm like, you're in the airing cupboard. Get out. But he did have his eyes open, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Scary.
Scary.
It is scary,
it's
isn't
like
it?
A zombie walking around.
Yeah. I can remember being at a mate's house and he had a younger sister who had white hair and very pale skin. So she looked scary
anyway.
She
looked like a ghost.
She looks like a ghost anyway. And she was younger than us, so she went to bed first. She had a cough at the time.
Yeah.
And I can remember we were in the kitchen playing cards and we heard her coughing at the top of the stairs. So, she's obviously woken back up. And then we saw her walk out of the front door.
Oh,
I could see
God.
Like through the window, I could just see it walking like across the gravel.
Oh, that's really
white.
Scary.
Yeah, yeah. We went out there and just redirected her.
Well, you do hear these stories of people that sleepwalk and wander down the road and the little toddlers wandering, you know, down into the village in the middle of the night and people finding them. It's quite scary,
do
really.
Do you actually die if you get woken up from a sleepwalk?
No, that's not
say,
true.
What's the rule? What actually
don't
happens?
Don't wake someone up. I think you're just supposed to like kind of prod
just
them in the right direction,
them,
aren't you? Yeah. I don't think they die if you wake them up. I think that might be an old wives' tale. But yes, a lot of ideas come in my sleep. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and go, oh, I've had a really good idea for my book or for the podcast or something. And it's in that period between sleep and waking up that my mind is kind of really creative.
Yeah, I have heard that. Actually, I listened to a podcast this week on sleep, actually. And it talked about how that's why a lot of musicians or artists, whatever, will take marijuana or will take or something will write very, very late at night because you're sort of in that weird semi-lucid state where a lot of ideas seem to get generated.
Interesting.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, sleep is a topic that if you get two parents in conversation together, it will inevitably come up, particularly if they both have young kids, I reckon I'll give it about 15 minutes before someone starts talking about sleep, which is often quite a dull conversation between parents.
Yeah, because I don't actually care.
Is yours sleeping? Yeah, mine.
I don't care if they're sleeping or not.
Yeah, I know. And but you still
I pretend
feel,
to care.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not sleeping. Oh, it's a shame.
Not only does it play an integral role in any parent's life, it plays an equally important role in our addictions, our sobriety, and our recovery.
Yep, you're not wrong. Over the course of this episode, we will dreamily guide you through why sleep is important, how it is affected by your alcohol intake, and how much it will affect your sobriety.
Just had a weird thought. This has got nothing to do with the podcast, but isn't it funny how the biggest nightmare of all is not being able to fall asleep when you're really tired?
Yeah.
But to have a nightmare, you have to be asleep.
Yeah, so it's like a weird
it's like a day-night
combo, yeah. Anyway, I'm not really sure what goes on in your tiny little mind, Hamish, but let's get on with the podcast. One of the first benefits that most people noticed in their sobriety is a dramatic improvement in the quality of their sleep. It's a total game changer. But before we delve too far into that specifically, or pacifically, as some people I hate say, let's take a moment to examine the importance of sleep more generally.
So I hate to surprise our listeners this early in the podcast, but neither Vic nor I are sleep specialists or neuroscientists.
I am actually a neuroscientist, didn't you know?
Are you?
Yeah, yeah, qualified. I've got thousands of degrees and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me one thing about neuroscience.
Something. It's about looking at the brain, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. You do know your shit. I stand corrected. As a result, we do a lot of research before each episode in order to come across smarter than we actually are and also save you the trouble doing the research. So here's what we found.
Sleep is beneficial for the body and mind.
Okay, that is basic. We didn't actually have to research that. Yep. Vic is a neuroscientist. She knew that already. She learned it during one of her degrees.
Just in case you're listening to this podcast for the first time, I am not a neuroscientist, just so you know.
There are plenty of podcasts with neuroscientists that you could check out. This
might,
isn't it?
Yeah, they might know that already by the Whitney Houston dreams.
Tell us more, Vic.
Yeah, let's start with how it affects the mind. Sleep services all aspects of your body in one way or another. Molecular, energy balance, as well as intellectual function, alertness and mood.
This is more like it.
Sleep helps you think more clearly, have quicker reflexes and focus better. A loss of it impairs your higher levels of reasoning, problem solving and attention to detail. Oh, they're not small things, those.
No, those are all quite big things.
Yes.
Tired people are also less productive. A lack of sleep influences your mood, which can affect how you interact with others. A sleep deficit over time can even put you at greater risk of developing depression.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me, Hame, because I know how I feel when I don't get any sleep, especially when the kids have been up all night. It is really impactful on me. Yep.
Well, I obviously work at this radio station here, and the breakfast show, you have to be in the office by 4 a.m. So anyone that works on the breakfast show is up at 3 a.m. And I've only had to do the shift every now and then, but the guys that do that shift regularly, I've literally watched them deplete.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like it's such a strange... I think even getting strange hours, they might be getting 7 or 8 hours, although I doubt it. But, you know, by midday, which is when they clock off, they are not their best selves.
Mm. You know? Cock off.
Yeah.
Cock off, you mean, don't you?
Did I say cock off?
Yeah, you did. Okay.
By the time they snap it off and head home, they are not the best version of themselves.
Oh, dear. I might add here, although I'm not sure if it is scientifically proven or not, that lack of sleep certainly affects my self-control.
Yeah.
My diet is worse when I'm tired, and this might be the same for those really struggling in their sobriety. I mean, it affects everything.
Interesting. I wonder if it's the fact that you sleep badly after drinking or the fact that you're hungover, which means that you eat like crap.
I think it's a combination of all of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got some of the meals I've had. On the hangover.
Yeah. And the sugary stuff that you eat the next day, that's going to affect your sleep ongoing, isn't
it? For sure.
Yeah.
So sleep affects all parts of our body as well. That's all of it. Sleep affects almost every tissue in our bodies. It affects growth and stress hormones, our immune system, our appetite, our breathing, blood pressure, and cardiovascular health.
Right. Research shows that a lack of sleep increases the risk of obesity. Explains a lot.
Sure.
Heart disease and infections. Oh, we do get a lot of infections, don't I, Hamish?
You are generally infected.
Yeah. Yeah. Disease-ridden, aren't I? Yeah.
Are you beginning to see the similarities between a lack of sleep and over-drinking?
Yeah, it's very clear. I mean, it's affecting everything from what you're saying. Just quickly, Hamish, what is good sleep?
Okay, fair question. So most adults require between 7 and 8 hours of sleep a night. Of course, this is different from one person to another. Teenagers typically require a little more, whilst babies can get a cool 16 hours a day.
Lucky babies.
I know.
I know, and I know what those teenagers, I know why they're tired. Boys especially. Kids, when they sleep during the day, then they don't sleep at night, and it just causes all sorts of problems. So I'm desperate for my four-year-old not to sleep during the day at the moment, because I know he's exhausted then. Yeah. But then he's always tired during the day and really grumpy, so he can't win.
Are you one of the parents that goes, tip number one for new parents, sleep when the baby sleeps?
That doesn't work, though. I'm terrible. No, I can't sleep during the day.
Does not. Well, it doesn't even work, because when the baby sleeps, it's like the only time you have to get all the shit done.
And what? Yeah, and relax for a moment.
Yeah.
And sit and actually have a moment to yourself. You don't want to sleep in that time. But everyone always says that to you.
Yeah.
Sleep when the baby sleeps, but it doesn't really work.
I did it once. Actually, we did it once 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
We slept for 2 hours in the afternoon. Liz and I were both sick.
Okay.
So I think
that was
about
good.
Both of us being sick and parenting is intense. But yeah, we slept for 2 hours in the afternoon. And it was blissful.
Okay, that is cozy when it happens. Yeah.
If you can do it, great.
If you can do it,
it does rattle
it.
Me when people give you that advice.
Yeah.
I would if I could, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you. So yeah, good night's sleep consists of between 4 and 5 sleep cycles. So what's a cycle? Well, each cycle includes a period of deep sleep and rapid eye movement, that's REM sleep, which is when we dream. As the night goes on, the portion of that REM sleep gets longer and longer.
Gosh, got it. So we know what sleep is and why it's important for us to get enough of it to be our sparkly best selves. But how did it affect us during our drinking years, hey?
Okay, so for me, I would be completely unable to sleep in. So if I got in at 4 in the morning, I think, great, I'll just sleep until midday. But I'd wake up at 8 and I'd be, weirdly, I would rarely wake up with a hangover. I'd wake up at 8 and I'm like, sweet, I've got away with it.
Oh, that is, what's the word? Very misleading, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah. Because you think, oh my gosh, I'm fine. Yeah.
You're just drunk.
But then I'd be like a zombie. But, you know, awake and not feeling hungover, but like a zombie until about midday. Then I'd have a nap and then the hangover would hit.
Oh, right. So you get away with it for quite a few hours.
Yeah, but not always. It wasn't always like that. I think when I first started, wake up hungover. But then from about 20 until I gave up, that was the routine.
Wow, gosh.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
No.
Also,
it's a bad thing. None of it's good. Yeah, none of it's good.
But for me, you know, because I was someone that threw up, I spent a lot of my nights out sleeping on loo seats. Like my head
on
the loo
seat.
Let's
go out for a night with Hamish.
But you know when you're imagine the situation. I hope you're listening to this. Actually, there's no good time to listen to this. But you're about to throw up, so your head is on the rim of the loo.
Yep.
And you throw up, and then you're sort of dozing in between, and then you actually fall asleep, and you headbutt the far side of the loo seat. You had that?
I've never had that. I've never fallen asleep on the loo seat.
I've had it a lot.
Yeah.
I've had it a lot.
Oh, imagine all the bums that have been there as well.
Hopefully, just. Mine and whoever else. I'm not in a public toilet here.
Oh, you're not at the pub?
No, I'm not in a pub.
Okay.
I'm falling asleep on the rim of a loo in a pub. This is it back at home.
Okay, right. That's okay, right.
I also used to get room spin a lot. So I would, if I could fall asleep, great. But usually I would be on one side of my head. It would take me half an hour to like calibrate. And then I'd make the mistake of rolling over. Oh no, the room's going to start again. Take about 45 minutes to stop. So I was constantly trying to be still, but inevitably overheating or needing to roll.
You're just reminding me with everything you say, like how like, oh yeah, let's go out drinking, it's fun. But these consequences are massive.
Yeah.
Like you can't lie down without the room spinning.
I know.
It's bad.
And then I think of like a lot of bad places that I've slept whilst drunk. So for us, like a 21st birthday seemed to just come one summer. Everyone seemed to have a 21st birthday party. So everyone would drive there to someone's house, have the party, and everyone sleep in their cars. Sleeping in a car in a black tie when you wake up and it's like sunrise and hot and you're hungover and you're, you know, pretty much upright is the worst. I think the worst sleep you can have.
Oh, sleeping in a car.
I've done a lot of camping, woken up in like puddles at music festivals, and I reckon sleeping in a car in a black tie is worse.
Why are you in a black tie?
Because they're black tie these 21st. They're like fancy
ones.
Oh,
fancy ones.
Yeah.
Black tie.
I know.
That's cool.
What about you? You got some weird drunk sleep stories?
Well, I always, when I was drinking, I'd have that 3 a.m. wake up. So I'd go out boozing, get into sort of blackout state, not sure how I got home. Everything was a haze. And then there'd be this point where I'd wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to the toilet, walk into the bathroom and to down some water or, you know, get my head under the tap. And I would feel really awake because I would be having heart palpitations. It was kind of like an adrenaline rush, like the alcohol would wear off and suddenly I'd be wide awake.
Yeah.
And I found it really hard to get back to sleep then. But then when I did, I would go back into a heavy sleep. You know, when you wake up with the lines of the sheets all over you. I don't know why sometimes you, like when you're in a really heavy sleep, you wake up with the lines
with
of the sheets
face.
On your face. I don't really understand why that is. But anyway, it's when you're in a really deep sleep. The worst sleep I ever got throughout my life was the day after a hangover.
Yeah.
So I'd have the hangover. I'd be up in the morning. I'd be up at that 3 o'clock. I'd go back to sleep and probably wake up at sort of 10. I'd have the longest day of my life feeling hungover. And then I was getting the fear quite early on the evening because I knew I wouldn't sleep that night. And I would go to bed and that's when the anxiety would really kick in because I couldn't sleep. And I knew I had to go to work on the Monday. Yeah. I had stuff to do or look after the kids or whatever. But that was the really bad sleep, was 24 hours after the session.
Maybe it was that binge eating. Maybe it was on the hangover you're doing crisps and pizza and Coca-Cola. And-
yeah. Just trying to recover in whatever way I could.
Interesting.
Nothing worked for me, though, even if I didn't do the binge eating or anything. Even if I just didn't eat nothing. Often I couldn't eat anything because I was so ill. Mm. It was that night after. Because I think it was a combination of anxiety and dread and also of embarrassment and humiliation. Because by that point, I would have recollected a few of things that I'd done the night before. And I would have that thing that I call the fear of not remembering what I've done, or like that hollowness that you get when you're hungover and you've acted out the night before and you feel like you've probably offended someone, but you don't know who that is. So all of that would come back to me by that evening and it would all be spinning around my head, making me paranoid, making me upset. And, you know, I'd be trying to text people, is everything okay? What was I doing last night? So that would all come to a head in the evening. So therefore I wouldn't sleep because of that as well. So it was the lack of sleep plus all that other stuff on top. Drinking alcohol basically gave me really, really bad sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest place you've ever slept?
I slept on a waltzer once.
What's a waltzer?
You know, a waltzer at the fair that spins round.
Oh, merry-go-round?
Yeah, no, like one of those seats, and there's the guy that comes around. He's always some dodgy geezer who's trying to get off with you.
Okay, yeah.
Who wears slip-on shoes and white socks. The louder you scream, the faster we'll go.
Yeah.
One of those. I slept on one of those.
Interesting.
Woke up, don't know why. Didn't even know there was a fair in town. I woke up at a waltzer. Once I got cut out of a hammock by a really angry guy. I was asleep in a hammock, and a guy had. I woke up to a cutting sound, and a guy had chopped the ropes, so
what?
I fell to the ground.
Was it his?
Yeah, it was his. He said, "This is my hammock." Yeah.
So you were on his property?
No, I hadn't broken in. I was on a beach in Thailand.
Oh,
somebody cut me out of a hammock. He could have just tapped me on the shoulder and woken me up.
He probably tried that.
He probably maybe did actually.
Yeah.
I slept in someone's garage for a week when I lived in Byron Bay. I had something called the stench den when I lived at my parents' house. That was their shed. I've done a lot of sheds.
Stench
living.
Den.
Yeah, I called it the stench
that
den because it smelled like a hamster cage.
Yeah.
I've slept in the Sahara Desert in a nomadic Bedouin's tent before. I got a camel. Caught a camel, didn't I?
Yeah.
Hitched by the side of the desert.
A night out in London, woke up in the Sahara Desert.
Yeah. On a camel. Gave me the hump, Hamish, to say the least. Yeah, I went to this drumming session in the middle of the Sahara Desert and that made me all paranoid and I couldn't sleep and we'd been drinking the night before.
Yeah.
Bad combo. It should have been an amazing experience, but I just woke up really paranoid in the middle of the night in the middle of the Sahara Desert.
Wow.
Not a good look. Probably worse than you and your bow tie in the back of the car.
That is bad, yeah.
And I also slept on a shelf. We've both slept on shelves throughout our lives.
We have both slept on shelves. Where was your shelf?
I slept on a shelf in Thailand for about a year.
Why?
Yeah, with a chicken that lived under my bed called Kevin.
Whoa, why?
Yeah, just because it was the only place to sleep. I ran a bar, so I just there was a little shelf there, so I'd just go to bed on the shelf.
That's good. Yeah, see, my shelf was in that bookshop. So I was
yes.
at Shakespeare and Company bookshop, and I slept over the kids section.
Yeah.
I also slept in a cave for a bit in France. So a mate of mine who I was at drama school with didn't want to rent a place during his time there.
Yeah.
So he went on a bike ride and he found a cave that wasn't too far from our school. So I used to go stay with him a bit and go sleep in his cave.
Oh, that's
that
so funny.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about any other weird places I've slept. I've spent a lot of my life sleeping on the 137 bus in London, the night bus. And because it either finished at Streatham Hill, Telford Avenue, my stop, or it's finished in Crystal Palace.
Okay.
If I made the mistake of getting the one that finished in Crystal Palace and I fell asleep, miles from my house.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that happened.
Buses. I used to pretend to sleep on the train to work, so then when the ticket man would come,
yeah,
I'd like put a little bit of dribble on the side of my face,
yeah,
pretend to be asleep so he wouldn't wake me up, and then avoid my train,
yes,
ticket price from Reading up to Paddington.
That, I reckon everyone has got a story like that. Pretending to be full. There's no way they fall for it as well. You're going dribble and you're snoring.
I know.
You overplay it.
Well,
you've got
an
eye mask on.
Yeah, you get on and then straight away you're like...
Yeah, yeah.
People opposite me are like, what are they doing? They must fall asleep very quickly. Oh, it's funny, hey? We get loads of emails here at Sober Awkward asking where to start, how to take your first steps into sobriety. I remember that feeling too. I knew there was something going on with me, but I had no idea where to turn. But luckily things have changed in the last 5 years, and now there's an incredible course especially designed for women like me. This is where the wonderful Sarah Rusbach comes in. Sarah is an expert in grey area drinking. She's supported thousands of women to successfully change their relationship with alcohol. Sarah's April Challenge is available to women all over the world and is designed to educate, inspire, support, and guide you in long-term change around your drinking. You'll be doing the course alongside women that feel like you do, and like I did back then. You'll make lifelong friends who'll be there to cheer you on. Sarah's course covers a huge range of female-related subject matters, such as alcohol and menopause, alcohol and friendships, alcohol and sex, and of course, alcohol and anxiety, which is something I suffered from. To ensure you don't miss out on Sarah's April challenge, head to her website, sararusbach.com.
The obvious question to ask is, why does alcohol affect our sleep, and how many drinks do you have to have in order for your sleep to be affected?
Oh, good question. Mm. A lot of people fall into the trap of having a few drinks in order to help them fall asleep. This is particularly common during long-haul overnight flights or whilst camping, or at least at a music festival, as tent sleeping is often much less comfortable than sleeping in a bed, to say the least.
For sure. Now, the logic behind this is not totally mad. Alcohol is a central nervous system depressant that causes brain activity to slow down. So it does have sedative effects that can induce feelings of relaxation and sleepiness. The issue is not in the falling asleep, it's what happens next.
Okay, this is heavy stuff.
This does get heavy. Hold
After,
on.
Okay, I'll probably stumble over my words. Yeah. After a person consumes alcohol, got this, listen, ears pricking up, The substance is absorbed into your bloodstream.
Okay, that's easy.
Okay, enzymes in the liver eventually metabolize the alcohol, but because this is fairly slow process, excess alcohol will continue to circulate throughout your body. As liver enzymes metabolize the alcohol during the night and the blood alcohol level decreases, we are also more likely to experience sleep disruptions and decreases in sleep quality.
Okay. Do you understand that? That was a bit much.
I can
simplify it.
Go on.
And I'm not a scientist like you, unfortunately, so I'll just give it out the way that I understand it for the muggles listening.
Go on.
Basically, your body has to work all night to break down the alcohol. So whereas you think you're asleep and resting, your body's in overdrive, which is why we wake up feeling tired.
Okay, exactly. So you're passed out, perhaps.
Yeah.
Like you actually, the alcohol has made you anesthetized, so therefore you're passed out. But actually your body is functioning really, really hard, which
that's
is
it.
What your hangover is, to try and get rid of that toxin that's in there.
Well done for saying anesthetized.
Thank you very much.
Liz cannot say that word.
No, it isn't.
She tries and tries. Weird how often it comes up, and she tries and tries, she cannot say it.
I think there's a few words I can't say. There's one word I can't remember, which I, funny enough,
okay,
I can't tell you what it is because I don't know what it is.
She did yesterday. We were watching, this is almost something you do hungover, but she wasn't hungover. She woke up at 3:30 with,
yeah,
Sunny, and she watched the best Britain's Got Talent auditions ever
those,
on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, Golden Buzzers.
Really emotional.
Yeah, love those.
And one of them, she told me, was a transviloquist.
Transviloquist? What's that?
It's a ventriloquist.
Oh. Oh, it's quite sweet, really.
It's quite sweet, isn't it?
Remember what we taught you about REM sleep cycles and how these get longer throughout the night? The opposite is true after drinking booze.
That's right. So since alcohol is a sedative, it often takes you less long to fall into a deep sleep. As the night progresses, this can create an imbalance between slow-wave sleep and REM sleep. As your REM sleep decreases rather than increases throughout the night, your overall sleep quality is poor and you often sleep less long and with more sleep interruptions.
Surely this wouldn't be affected by just one glass of wine or beer, would it, Hamish?
Actually, Vic, and I hate to say this because people will be holding on to this.
Yeah.
Even one drink affects your sleep quality. So I found a 2018 study which compared sleep quality among subjects who consumed different amounts of alcohol. And here is what I found. Okay, so low amounts of alcohol, that's fewer than 2 servings per day for men or 1 serving per day for women, decreases sleep quality by 9.3%.
Okay, wow.
Almost 10% for one drink.
Gosh.
Moderate amount of alcohol, so 2 drinks a day for a man or 1 for a woman.
They're starting to say none, though, now, which is changing a little bit, especially in Canada. They've changed the rules to actually none is better.
So, yeah, moderate amounts of alcohol, sleep quality decreases by 24%. And high amounts of alcohol, that's probably most of us, at least back in the day. So that's more than 2 servings a day or more than 1 serving a day for a woman, decreases sleep quality by 39.2%.
That doesn't surprise me because I know how alcohol used to make me feel. Mm. And it used to make me feel quite hyper and very awake and very alert. For some people, it's drowsy, but I used to be like this level of heightened alertness when I first started drinking. And I would become more sort of wobbly and hazy throughout the night, but I know how alcohol made me feel, and I can just imagine what that's doing to my body and my heartbeat and everything that's going on in there. Given the fact that most of us give up drinking have probably reached a point where we would be considered high consumers of alcohol, it's perhaps not surprising that we immediately notice this increase in our sleep quality. According to this, it'll be 39.2% better immediately.
Yeah, that's like a few hours of your night. If you usually sleep 8 hours, 40% of 8 hours, Vic, you know the answer to that. imagine just losing like 2 of those hours are completely pointless.
That's why people feel amazing in early sobriety, because the first time they're getting a good night's sleep.
I do think if you asked 100, we should have done this on Cuppa, if you ask 100 people what the best thing about going sober was in that first month, I reckon 90 of them would say sleep.
I think so too.
Better sleep. Yeah. It comes up a lot.
Yeah.
We're okay talking about sleep quality with newly sober people, but new parents... bored.
Not interested.
So bored. For me, so when I first gave up, the impact was because Sunny had just been born, really. I think Sunny was a month or two old when I was gave up booze. I felt like I wasn't as tired as I should have been. Mm. I was waking up 4 or 5 times a night, but I wasn't a zombie all day, which I'm sure I would have been had I still been drinking.
Yeah.
Because I was actually always someone that needed a lot of sleep. You know, when I don't get enough sleep, I basically go mute. I feel frustrated, or like I would have a short fuse. And because I hate conflict so much, I just don't say anything.
Okay.
And actually, I was kind of like an anxiety that I had during the pregnancy was like, oh my God, what am I going to be like? I know what I'm like on minimal sleep.
Okay.
Are we going to bicker more? Is that going to be like, am I going to be not fun to be around?
Yeah.
So I remember actually worrying about it quite a lot. And I think a lot of people probably do in the build-up to that. So if you just time your sobriety with the birth of your child, like I did, it does take care of a lot of that anxiety. And I think that at least one parent should be sober during those early years. Obviously, ideally, both would be.
Yeah.
But given the fact that the lady has been like sober for 9 or 10 months, I feel like the onus lands on the man. Like, men, if you're listening, you should be sober for at least the first 10 months of your child's life.
Yes.
Your wife or girlfriend or whoever's just done a stint, now it's your turn. Because if both of you are drinking, then there's issues. You're going to sleep through his or her cries. If there's an emergency, you can't drive to the hostel. We've covered a few of these in the past. Yeah. But yeah, I think at least one of the people in a relationship needs to not drink during early stages of life.
Totally agree. And preferably, seeing as this is a sober, awkward podcast, neither of you will go back to drinking and you'll just be sober forever and it'll be wonderful.
Well, I reckon anyone that goes 9 months sober, I'm currently, what am I now, July, I don't know how many months sober I am.
You
maybe
must
8.
Be 7
I'm probably
or 8.
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I reckon once you've gone for this long, I imagine it's difficult to go back.
I can't imagine having, or anyone I know, I don't know, having that first drink and thinking, oh, this is okay.
It'd be an interesting stat. I guess a lot of people give up for a month, like they do a January or July, and then go back. But I wonder if the longer you go, the less likely it is that you go
definitely,
back.
Definitely, I
think
would
there
say.
There must be
definitely.
Some sort of scale for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because you just feel so amazing and you feel so happy and your sleep's better and your skin's better and your life is better. So then it's like, oh, well, why would I do this? And then also because you've educated yourself about the impact it's having socially, mentally, physically, and all of those things, then you start to think, well, why would I do that again? Yeah. But we've talked about that. And we'll have an update on your sobriety maybe in a couple of episodes' time to find out exactly what's going on with you.
I think we do a 300 days check-in.
Okay, perfect.
I think that's what we're going to do. What about you? How have you noticed your sleep improve since going sober?
It has improved 100-fold. Because alcohol made me not sleep well, so therefore that caused anxiety, which made me quit in the end. Of course, all of that paranoia and all those feelings which I talked about earlier are actually what made me quit. So my lack of sleep was making me unwell during that period. And now I sleep really well. Of course, there are interruptions and there's kids getting up, but it's not me lying in bed dying. I can cope with my kids getting up and giving them a cuddle and helping put them back to sleep. Those things are doable. I mean, it's not perfect. And sometimes I do wake up really, really tired and that does affect my mood, but it's better than me lying in bed feeling like death, basically. Yeah. During that period when I was drinking and parenting and waking up in the night, it was awful, Hamish. It was like one of the worst times of my life, and it really did risk my mental health. And so no sleep plus a hangover, it meant, with a crying baby as well, it meant that I got really no sleep at all. So you can imagine, after all that we've just read here about how it affects your sleep quality, just one drink, imagine that. No sleep, plus a baby, plus all the alcohol in my system. It was completely fucking me over. So now I am a much, much happier sleeper, and I know that it affects my life hugely.
I can't think of many worse things. I've said this before, but yeah, being hungover with a baby, I can't imagine that. There can't be many things worse as a parent. Obviously, your child gets sick or something awful happens, but being hungover and someone screaming at you and pooing on you is pretty bad, isn't it?
Really bad.
At 3 a.m.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah. Vic, can you please introduce us to Vic on No Sleep? Okay, so what are you like after zero sleep or after drunk sleep in comparison to you today?
Well, the difference is an ogre to a pretty normal, chill person.
Okay.
If I don't get any sleep, I am horrible. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I love life if I have a good sleep. I hate life if I've had a nasty night. So it's really clear. John knows if I've had a bad night. I have something called my prickly nights.
Okay, good. Good. I like the fact you phrased it.
Yeah, I get prickly at night sometimes. Like my skin feels prickly. I don't know what it is, whether it's hormonal or I have no idea. But I have to often get up and shave my legs. I think that's probably what it is.
So that's John's what we're doing at 3 a.m. in the bathroom.
Yeah, John finds me in the bathroom at 3 a.m. shaving my legs. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm having a prickly night. Yeah, my body feels all like zappy and stuff. And it's really when I'm hot as well.
Yeah.
It's like a combination of a few things make me have, even if the kids don't wake up, there's sometimes some nights where I just have a really bad night's sleep. John knows on those days, if it's a weekend, to take the kids out in the afternoon, even if I just go and lie down, I'm not a good day sleeper, just to sleep it off, because he knows it's worth it for him to have the kids for a couple of hours for me to kind of try and feel a bit better and be a bit more compos mentis, because if my head's wobbly and I haven't had enough sleep, I am grumpy. It's as simple as that.
When you say you're grumpy, what does that look like? Is it short-tempered with the kids? Is it you know, like not putting in enough effort? What does you grumpy mean?
It just means I can't cope with anything that's going on. I can't make decisions. I can't go to the shops because I don't know what to buy. Like, it's like my brain has been mashed and I don't know who I am anymore.
Yeah.
It's really severe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I've had no sleep, you do not want to be around me.
Okay, that I can relate to. So for me, no sleep, the decision making for sure. You know, you look at your friend, you go, what should we watch? Like that, what should we watch? And then you just watch 35 trailers of films. And then you're like, it's been 2 hours, just do something else.
Yeah.
That I get a lot. And also I get complete lack of motivation. So, and you know, it's often on a Sunday after drinking, you maybe a Friday night or Saturday night, Sunday, you got work the next day and I've got zero drive. I can't, you know, what does it really matter? It's only my career, you know, like I'm that quite a lot.
Oh, that's funny.
Does it matter? You know, it's only meeting the right person in your life and settling down.
Big things you can't be bothered to
do
anymore.
Just can't be asked. Yeah. I get that quite a lot. And then for me, big time, the self-control goes. So
eating poorly, just not putting in the effort. You know, if I have to call someone, I know they're waiting for a call, I can't be asked to give them a call. Yeah. You know, just really lethargic and quiet.
Yeah.
That is me.
Yeah. I can't imagine you. I can imagine you going quiet. I don't really imagine you going grumpy. I think there's some guilt involved as well. Like, because if I am grumpy, then I might shout at the kids, which I hate.
Yeah.
And then I feel bad about myself. And then it's just like this kind of negative circle of horribleness. Mm.
See, I hate being tired. I bury the grump so that I would not come across grumpy. But only because I'm dealing with it internally in silence.
Oh, that's almost worse.
It is worse.
It's probably better to shout.
It is worse, yeah. For sure. But Liz quite likes it because Liz's like, we never have lazy days. I don't know if other British people that live here in Australia or somewhere else hot, no matter how long they've lived in that country, still look out the window on the weekend and it's sunny and go, we have to be outside.
Yes,
let's do things.
Yes, yeah.
Because in England, it's not sunny often. So when it's sunny, you're out and like making the most of the day.
Yeah.
And I still have that now. So if I have a day where I'm like unbelievably tired, Liz is like, sweet, we can finally just sit on the sofa all day. Or like yesterday, for example, we cooked all day and actually have an inside day.
Mm.
Because I've been here 5 years and I haven't caught up to the fact I live on the Sunshine Coast.
It's sunny
all the time.
It is sunny all the time.
You can have days in.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, we used to have cozy nights when I was little growing up, where my mum and dad would go and buy loads of sweets and we'd have a cozy night and we'd just sit and eat sweets all night and watch movies.
Yeah.
I used to look forward to it.
Yeah.
But now you're not really allowed to eat, stuff your face with sweets or stuff your children with sweets. And we don't have cozy nights because it's not cold enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Things change when you move country, but it is sunny here all the time. So, like, I can understand why you feel like you need to be outside all the time.
It's weird that once you get to the age where really you could eat sweets all the time, now you don't.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when you're a kid, you're like, when I'm older, I'm just going to eat sweets all the time. That is what adulthood looks like. And you get to adulthood, you eat some sweets sometimes.
I never thought I'd stop recording the top 40. I was like, when I grow up, I will never stop recording my favourite songs in the top 40.
Straight off the radio,
straight
onto a cassette.
Onto a cassette.
And pushing, trying to stop it before.
Yeah, pushing record and play at the same time.
And then just before the radio announcer says, oh,
yes, quick.
Yeah, it's good. We could sit here and talk all day about the benefits of better sleep in our lives, not just as parents, but as functioning humans. This is not just a question of being someone that really values your sleep. This is about being someone that has the ability to operate at full capacity, mentally and physically.
Something you might be less aware of is the role that sleep plays in maintaining your sobriety. Since sleep and addiction have a complex two-directional relationship, research has shown that people with insomnia or other sleep problems are at higher risk of developing a drug or alcohol addiction.
Yeah, that's what I like about this episode. So if you're currently drinking, you need to learn about sleep because you're getting bad sleep. If you're newly sober, sleep's going to be really important to staying sober. And later we'll talk about sleep's role in people who relapse.
Yeah.
So it's, it sort of covers all bases.
Yeah.
It does make sense people that have sleep problems become addicted to various things because a lot of people look at drugs to help fix a lack of sleep.
Yeah,
we
definitely.
Go, okay, well, I'll start drinking so I can fall asleep quicker, or marijuana, or sleeping pills. But the flip side of that is that then during the day you're drowsy and then people look for different drugs to stay awake or stay active during the day. So it's kind of a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope. I mean, I know people that have given up drinking and because they're used to sort of numbing themselves out in the evening and going to sleep easily, they are then going towards sobriety but looking at a prescription pill addiction because they're using the pills to get themselves to sleep and then they become reliant upon that. So, don't put anything in your body is our advice, but
but that is actually important to say. Although as much as we're talking about the benefits of sleep once you go sober, it doesn't happen immediately for everyone.
Not for everyone, no. We can't cover every single person in the whole world. All we can do is tell you our stories and tell you what happened to us and say that of course, getting a pill addiction after having an alcohol addiction isn't the best thing to do, of course.
Sure.
Being sleep deprived also has been shown to lead to cognitive impairments. That explains a lot with me, Hamish.
Mm.
Like increased impulsivity, that's me getting a biscuit, poor judgment, eating 10 of them, irritability, being grumpy afterwards because I'm on a sugar come
being
down.
Being annoyed you haven't got 11.
Yeah, exactly. All of which can lead to an increase in consumption or a relapse, of course. In fact, people recovering from alcohol addiction are twice as likely to relapse if they're not getting sound sleep every night.
Twice as likely to relapse
twice.
If you're getting bad sleep.
Yep.
That is a crazy stat. But it's not all bad news. Every coin has two sides. said someone, probably somewhere.
Yes.
Sounds like a saying.
Yeah, I think that is true. Also, I'm just going to think very quickly. I advise anyone who is going sober, save the money that you would have spent on booze and buy some good pillows, some good sheets, some really nice like 1,000-thread sheets. You can get them cheap on sale. Mm-hmm. I got some down at Spotlight the other week on sale. And making your bed a sort of cozy land of loveliness is going to be a really good thing for you to do in your sobriety, to make yourself comfortable and make that sleep a bit easier.
I do have a theory that there is no amount of money that is too much to spend on a pillow.
I agree.
You spend 8 hours a day on it. Yeah. There is nothing else in your life that you're spending 8 hours a day on.
Yeah.
If it's £100.
Yes.
It's still worth it.
It is still worth
it. You're going to have it for like, I don't know when pillows get old.
I think it's supposed to be like a year.
Okay, then £100 is too much. Yeah. Okay, I'll take that back.
Yeah. No one changes their pillows every year. No, though, do they? No. You just change them when they get those gobby yellow stains on them.
What are they?
I don't know.
They cannot get rid of that weird yellow stain. It's gone through two pillowcases.
Is it dribble?
Not all of it can be dribble.
I don't think I dribble, but no. I definitely have those yellow stains
fake
after
tan,
a few.
Fake tan.
It's not fake tan. I don't wear fake tan. It's the horrible pillow
maybe
monster.
Maybe it's eye goop.
Whatever it is, throw that away because it's not good, is it?
No.
Invest in bedding. It's a good idea.
Yes.
Yeah. Getting good sleep at night is one of the most important things you can do for your recovery. Although it might not happen straight away, as your body might be experiencing withdrawal of some kind, it will come eventually, and it is blissful when it does. If you are newly sober and your sleep hasn't improved yet, don't panic. There is plenty of help out there, so just ask a professional and get rid of those weird brown dribbly pillows.
Yeah. It's a cycle that can work for your benefit. Once you've broken out of the cycle of poor sleep, mental health problems and addiction, your body will have an easier time regulating sleep. You'll no longer have substances or withdrawals that keep you awake at night. And getting restful sleep every night will improve your mental health, which will in turn decrease your desire to use drugs and alcohol in the first place. This is the promised land.
Gosh, yeah, that is such good advice, Hamish.
So what have we learned?
Very little, probably, that we have to change our pillows, get
that,
new sheets.
Buy sheets. Buy sheets. That's what we've learned.
Buy sheets.
We always imagine that the things that we go away and we research are actually common knowledge to you guys. In our heads, you're all geniuses who already know all this and you're just giggling away about our naivety.
Yeah, it's just two morons on a podcast talking about things that everybody else knows apart from us.
Yeah, that's it.
We find it interesting and enlightening, but you all know that you should change your pillows once a year.
People listen to us like charity. We're like, oh, look at these people trying their best, just regurgitating things that are common knowledge.
We hope you've learned a little about how sleep works, the ways in which it affects all aspects of our lives, how even the smallest amount of alcohol will impact the quality of sleep we get, and how important it is to your recovery.
Not to mention the fact that it will be high on the list of best things about being sober. Just ask anyone.
Finish with a quote or two?
Yeah, I had some fun researching these. Okay, so I was going to finish by sharing some of my weird and wild dreams, but you sort of covered that at the start. I don't want to go there.
Okay, with my Whitney.
Yeah, I'll tell you off mic. But here are some quotes I've got. I've got, four or five, I probably narrowed it down from 10. And these
are my
top five.
Okay, there's going to be loads of sleep quotes, aren't there?
Yeah.
Do you want me to read the first one?
Please do.
A good laugh and a long sleep are the best cures in the doctor's book.
Sure. A day without a nap is like a cupcake without frosting.
Fair.
Yeah.
I love sleep. My life has a tendency to fall apart when I'm awake.
That's Ernest Hemingway, so you know it's legit. There is no sunrise so beautiful that is worth waking me up to see it.
I don't get that one.
So she values her sleep more than she values beautiful sunrises.
Yeah. Good old Mindy Kaling.
Okay, you're the naive one. Okay, I'm the smart one of the two here.
Oh, no, I see it. I just think, it's not really a saying. It's just something you think in your brain.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry. I came up with these, you can tell.
She doesn't need to put it on the internet. She can just think it.
Just let Mindy...
I think about quotes. Just think them.
Is that how we end every episode? Well, those are some quotes. There you go. Just think of a few to yourselves.
Just think of a quote. See you later. I've got one more that should probably also... It's by Anonymous. They should have just kept it in their brain as well, probably. I'm so good at sleeping that I can do it with my eyes closed.
That's a bit of fun. No, just think it.
Just think it.
You're doing the quotes on the next episode. You should have seen the ones I cut from the list.
I think we should just think this podcast as well.
We'll just do an hour.
We'll just do an hour.
People can treat it like meditation.
Staring into each other's eyes, just thinking stuff.
That's a lot easier for us to record.
It'd be so much better,
it's
yeah.
Not a lot of research.
No, but I'll do the research still, but just think about what I've learned.
And hope that the listeners get it.
I'll just do a video of me glaring into a camera.
For an hour.
like a sort of fucked up guru.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Anyway.
Go away and have thoughts.
Go away and think about your lives. If you're questioning your relationship with booze, you're struggling to moderate, or your hangovers are causing anxiety, it might be time to reach out for some support.
Yeah, just talk to a mate about how you're feeling, contact a local doctor, find an AA or sobriety group. Vic's got one.
Yeah, just head to www.cuppa.community.
Remember, if you're questioning yourself, it might be time to seek support.
Even though this journey can be awkward, it is definitely worth it. And if you've enjoyed the Sober Awkward podcast, don't forget to review it, rate it, and share it with your mates.
Do they have to share it with their mates?
Yeah, of course they do. I'm not doing this for nothing, Hamish. Bloody hell.
How do they share it?
I don't know, just write it on there.